This is the Better Architecture Podcast, and you're listening to Season 2, Design Media India 2024 edition of The Talks.
Hello everyone, this is your host Shubhayanam, and a warm welcome to Episode 3 of the Season 2 of the podcast, that's Design Media India 2024 edition. Today my guest is architect Rahul Saini. Rahul is based out of the National Capital Region, and he is an established author. If you follow him on social media, you will also know that he is on YouTube. Welcome to the show, Rahul. I hope you and your family is doing good in these times.
Hi. So glad to be here. Thank you so much. Yeah, we are managing. We are trying to stay as safe as possible. And yeah.
That's really great to hear. I mean, managing to be safe is the best that we can do right now. Now, before moving forward, I request my audience to head to the description to check out Rahul's complete bio. That will just help you to take the maximum out of this conversation. Right, so coming to the topic directly, that is design media. How do you look at this particular subdomain of this field? The word media provides a larger understanding of the entire domain in itself per se with respect to architecture and design. What is your perception of how media works in architecture, or say design as an umbrella term?
See, it's design media or media design. So how we want to look at it, that's one. So media design becomes something like, you know, graphic designs, magazine layouts, and it will extend to interior designs and poster designing and so on and so forth, even book layouts and stuff like that. So all of that I would consider as media design. So that's how I look at it.
Okay. I think I haven't thought of it like design media versus media design yet, though that is a field that I'd love to explore in this season as well. So thanks for the perspective. But then again, if we keep aside the word design media and say express it simply as architectural media and communications, then how does your perspective change there?
See, any comment or any critique about architecture, I would put it in that domain, and I would not really pay too much of attention on the media these days, because the media, traditionally talking about, we used to have print media and then digital media and audiovisual formats and audio formats and all of that. So today the lines are blurring, because once we log on to the internet, you read text, you watch videos, you listen to podcasts. So all of those mediums have kind of come together. So now it's more about the content in terms of what you want to say and the ideas, as opposed to the medium or the media as it used to be looked upon traditionally. Let me give you a very simple example. So let's say back in the 90s, when I was late 90s or the early 2000s, when either I was studying architecture or I was considering to study architecture, A plus B is a magazine which used to be, you know, very popular back in the day. So, and during our case studies as well, that was one magazine which we used to refer to a lot of times whenever we needed to, you know, work on any bigger and prestigious project, which was talked about a lot. Like if I was to pick up any of the B.V. Doshi's projects or Joseph Allenstein's projects, we used to refer to those magazines. That's a very different format. The language used makes a lot of difference, and then the images used make a lot of difference. But now all of those ideas, all of those case studies are there as documentaries on YouTube and all of the other formats. So there's a huge difference in how I would make a documentary for an architectural project, and there's a huge difference in how I will write about it as an article. But now what is happening is all the lines are blurring. So generally there are so many blogs which start with a write-up, and then they give an introduction, and then they would put in or video clips, and then they would put in pictures as well, and so on and so forth. So all the mediums have come together. So it's more to do with the idea that you want to present, as opposed to a specific study in terms of what medium are we using and how we utilize that.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the media is changing. That is, earlier it used to be print and magazines, and now it's moving into the online.
Instead of changing, I would want to say it's coming together, it's mixing, it's amalgamating.
And also evolving, if I may add.
Yeah, evolving. No, I would look at it as it's evolving, and in the process of that evolution, it's becoming an amalgamation of everything.
Right, so amalgamation is a new term And taking a cue from this word, would you then say that the media formats are coming together, merging up, and then say 50 years down the line, or I mean some suitable timeline down the line, we wouldn't have anything separable and it will be one big chunk maybe? I might be wrong. I mean,
it's hard to say because this notion has been floated a lot of times in the past at a lot of stages. When the motion pictures came in, there was a whole notion that entertainment media has transformed and we no longer will read stories, either in the form of short stories or novels, we'll just watch movies. That didn't happen. Then after that, when the digital versions of books came, then we were contemplating that, will the print books ever go out of fashion? That hasn't happened. The Kindle sales, the digital sales went up and then they went down and then the print books came back. So it's very difficult to understand how mediums do this strange dance of making an appearance and then disappearing. Because even if I look at the music formats, so we had LPs and the records way back before even I was born. And then my whole childhood, the exposure to music happened either on the radio or on the music cassettes. Then the CDs came. And then the digital streaming platforms came. And now we are back to vinyl records. And now today I listen to vinyl records and CDs more than I listen to streaming platforms. So all of that. So it's very difficult to predict these things. But yes, one thing which I think will happen for sure is that there will be a certain section where all these mediums will come together to create one multimedia platform where a lot of information will be available. But whether all these independent mediums will exist or not, that's something which I think only time will tell us.
Yes, absolutely. Time will tell. Okay. So also caught my attention there. Vinyl records. That's interesting. That's something that kind of took me off the hook. I mean, are they still available in the market?
They still are available. They are hell expensive. And many times if you're looking at international titles, so they need to be imported, but they are very much available.
Right. And that's news for me that, okay, vinyl prints are still available. I haven't had the chance of using a vinyl record till now. So that's kind of new for me. But well, circling back to our line of conversation here. And next, I'd like to know from you your inclination towards writing, say from architecture or even before that, what made you to be an author? Why did you choose this particular format? How did architecture lead you towards this?
So I think I had a drive to write ever since I was a kid, because books were something which had always fascinated me even when I was a kid. So I would have toys and I would have my books to play with even when I couldn't read. They were just like fun objects which you could just flip open, look at the images and so on and so forth. So that was always there. I always had a fascination for literature. I was among the very few. In fact, I think I was actually the only one in the whole class, in the whole school actually, who really enjoyed reading Shakespeare in 10th and 9th standard. So, but then of course, writing is not a lucrative career. And now that I've spent so many years writing, I understand this idea even more. So all of that done. So I wanted to have something which had a balance of an artistic input and technical input. And for that thing, architecture is actually the best option that you can pick up. But again, architecture also is not a very lucrative field. You cannot make a lot of money in architecture as well. But as a writer, you make even less, let me tell you that. So then I was like, okay, I need to study and I need to look at another alternative career. And maybe writing is something which, you know, will happen in the background and stuff. And then I joined college and we had Professor M.M. Rana as our founder and as our dean for a while. And he had his training from Frank Lloyd Wright back in the day. So, and he had inputs from him and he used to come and, you know, give it out to us. So he used to tell us that architecture, first of all, is not a career or a profession. It's a lifestyle. So you need to understand that. And second of all, he said that if you understand how to design something and if you understand the design aspect of architecture, you can go ahead and design anything. You can become an artist to begin with. You can become a photographer. you can become a writer, you can become an actor, you can become a singer, you can become anything because you understand the basics and fundamentals of design. And is it whether it's a design of emotion, how you want to play with the emotions that you're presenting, or you want to play with the physical forms or anything, you will get it if you understand the principles of design. I think that thing stuck in my mind. And this, all of these conversations used to happen very much in the first year. So throughout my architectural education, I kept examining that, you know, okay, this design principle and this design process is working here. Does it work for photography, or does it work for filmmaking? Does it work for music and stuff like that? So, because very simply put, people who don't even understand music much would understand the idea of rhythm and harmony in music and in architecture. That's the basic springing point where you start to see the similarities. And then I think one writes when one has a lot of dissatisfaction and a lot of disagreement with the world around them. Because if you are just happy with everything, you'll just keep saying that, okay, yes, this is fine, this is fine, this is fine. You would not want to, you would never experience the need to say something. So when I finished college and when I started working, I disagreed with everything. I was not okay with the way the things were. I did not find it acceptable how the offices worked, how the construction happened. I had a problem with everything.
And oh, well, been there, done that. So, you know, hands up. Yeah. Guilty as charged.
Yeah. So I think that dissatisfaction led me to write, because I wanted to state, first of all, that we are misled all our lives. We are told that when you start working, things will become very different. It doesn't. It becomes worse. And I did not spend 25 years of my life toiling the way I did just to sit in a cubicle in such a sterile environment. And this is a quote from my first book. So these were the dissatisfactions that I had, because of which I started writing. And of course, I can't deny that there are certain things which are destined to happen. There are certain things which are not in your control. They are, the cosmos has a way of playing with you like a toy. So the first book did phenomenally well. I still don't understand how it happened and what happened. I didn't even know what was happening. It actually came quite easy to me back then, because, you know, I just wrote the book, I gave it to the publisher, the publisher did what they did, and the book worked. And I didn't even know what the figures were supposed to mean. So, but it was because of that book worked so well. Only that's the reason why I considered, okay, now that I'm not going to give up this, because it seems to be working. And then the second book came, the third book came, and so on and so forth. So that's how things went on.
Okay, and you're currently on your which number?
So I'm writing the 8th and the 9th simultaneously. So that's what's on.
Right. And I think by the time this episode gets published, I think you'll be on your 11th or 12th probably, or more. So that's that. But the one thing that I need an answer from you, and I mean, this is personally for me. So architects are a critical lot. We tend to write critical stuff, jargonize everything, if I can use the word, and give it all a complex touch, mostly like we are trying to save the world or so, you know. So from there, from that lens, how did you come to write about stories of life, of romance, of comedy, of rom-com? I mean, the shift is drastic, you know. So how did that happen?
Okay, so I'm not a romantic person. I'm the exact opposite of a romantic person. So that's there. And I have always believed, and I have always been taught so as well, that if you can't explain something in very simple terms, you haven't understood it. And I think it's Einstein who said that. So that's that. At the same time, I also do understand the importance of complex text, because as an architect, I was subjected to a lot of complex text as well. My most favorite being The Genius Loci, The Spirit of a Place. So that's one text all architecture students must go through, at least the first chapter, if not the whole book. So that was what was my jumping, springing point. Coming to the idea of why I have written the romantic comedies, let me tell you, I have never written a romantic book. I have never written a romantic novel. None of my books are about romance. It's just that they are misunderstood. But people come back to me and they say, you write wonderful love stories. And I just sit back and I think, when did I ever write a love story? Because a love story is a story about two people who love each other, and that love has to be substantial and divine for that story to qualify as a love story, and none of my books have ever done that. On the contrary, I have always written about feelings which people think are love, and then by the end of it they realize it's not love, and then they move on and do other things in their lives which are more career oriented. So that is the theory, that is the philosophy that all of my books have always followed, that don't waste your time on these ideas. It's not going to lead you anywhere. If you think happiness can come to your life, it's only going to happen through your work. And this is the core philosophy that... Now, coming back to the idea why people conceive these as love stories, because I think I simplify things a bit too much. I simplify the idea so much that it doesn't sound something which is very heavy. It doesn't sound something which is very, you know, idea-centric. And it just comes across as a slice of life story. And I think that's why people perceive it like that.
Okay. I think then this is coming off as a bit shocking for me as well, but well, I'm not gonna let that overtake my episode, and we will move to the next sub discussion here. Career. Speaking of that, making a career out of writing, how rewarding is it when it comes down to having to fulfill the needs of your house and household and your mental satisfaction at the end of the day? I mean, finances is an important discussion throughout this season, so we need to keep in mind the expensive nature of the BRK education in India and the subsequent EMI load on students that they actually need to pay back. So from that point, how do you say that authorship holds up? How do you say writing books hold up?
Okay, so let me address this as two different questions and not one. So talking about the financial rewards and the financial returns, is it enough to sustain yourself and the family? The simple and plain answer to that will be no. And I don't have any doubts about it. Because what happens is, see, when someone needs to step into the whole field of writing as a career, the first book will need to have a lot of marketing push. And it's not cheap. Back in the day when my first book came, things were very different. And I think I'm just plain lucky to have written back then and to have had my first book out. But today, if I look at the landscape, today, if I look at the scenario, it's very different. So if you don't spend less than 3 to 4 lakhs on your book is not going to get recognized anywhere. So the struggle is you need to find a good publisher who will give you a good platform, who comes with a good brand value. Then you need to take the support of for marketing what they give. But since you are a debutant author and no one really knows you and no one is aware of your work, you need to put an extra push for marketing as well. And that will come at the cost that I mentioned. And I don't look at that as a small step, because as you said, architecture is already a very expensive course. And then you have this extra expenditure on top of that. Just like films, no one can guarantee the success of a book. So even if you spend all of this, there is a fair chance that the book might not work. So what to do? If you're really passionate about writing, if you think that is your calling and that is actually what you want to do, and even with all the financial setbacks, you will still want to stick to it. My clear advice is do not quit writing. Keep writing, you know, write your first book, write your second book, write your eighth book, write your 20th book. You don't know when things might work. So if you think you are a good reader, then don't quit. And if you think you can express your ideas by your writing and you are actually critical about your own writing, you're not someone who thinks I have written this is a masterpiece, this is the best book that has ever been written and I will become a star after that. If you don't fall in that category, if you're very critical about your own work and you are capable of finding flaws in your own work, keep writing and one day it will happen and that will be a certainty. But when it's going to happen, no one can tell you. It can happen in 1 year, it can happen in 5 years, it can happen in 25 years. So that's there. That said, how satisfying it is, it's way more satisfying than anything I've ever done. I've tried my hand at paintings, I've had certain shows, I've worked for the films for a while, I've taught. Teaching was very rewarding as well, that I have to mention. And I've tried a variety of things, but this is my 7th book that came out, which is called The Part I Left With You. And when the printed book came and when I held it in my hands for the first time, I was actually moved to tears all over again. And this is not the first book, this is the 7th book. So that's how satisfying and that's how fulfilling it is. But it comes without any money, without any financial returns. So one needs to keep that in mind.
Right. Okay. I do agree. And thank you for saying it out like that. not many people do. I mean, not many people are this honest. So, okay. Now, writing a book is a hard job. Like, none of us are like, aaj tera bhai book likhega and then finish it off just like that. I mean, a small book is about 20 to 30,000 words or even more. So, I mean, what are the approaches, say, for someone who has ideas and want to write? What are the steps to go from zero to, you know, 20,000 words?
Okay, that's a tricky one, actually. So there are so many different ways and approaches towards writing when we look at it. One is called free writing. And in order to do that, you need to have a good understanding of the language and a good command over the language. Like, it shouldn't be ki mera English itna acha nahi hai aur main seedha free writing karne baitha. So, and by free writing, what we mean is that you just sit down and you just start writing whatever comes to your mind. And human mind is not that unorganized and incomprehensible if you really start studying it. So whatever's coming out of your mind will actually start making sense after one point of time. Initially, it'll look all messed up, but after one point of time, it'll all start making sense. And then probably from that thread, you can carry on. Now that is the case in which you have indicators to tell you that your command on English language is good. You know, you were a brilliant student in the subject back in school and college. Your grammar is in place. You never found the grammatical subject a problem. And then you can go ahead with this technique. If that is not the case, if you think that you need to polish your linguistic skills and you need to, you know, strengthen your command on the language, then you have to start with nothing else but reading. And then you have to sit down and start reading and read it very critically, understand the, and not just read like just reading. You just have to understand the sentence structures as well and get a good hold of the language. And after that, you sit down and start writing. Now, some people might find the idea of free writing very easy and some people would find it very challenging. So the people who don't feel very comfortable with the idea of free writing, what they can do is they can have a simple flowchart that, okay, this is going to be the basic story structure and these are going to be the characters. And just develop a few character sketches. Some people find it easier to talk about things if they have a very strong physical image of the things that they want to write. So maybe they would want to build the character's physical features first and then start detailing the emotional qualities of the character later. So all of that one needs to do according to one's own sensibilities. So that's what I would say. So the first step will be read a lot. And the second step will be write a lot. Coming from architecture background, you would also understand and you must also have seen that a lot of people, when they create something once, no matter how inferior it might be, they just feel this is the biggest masterpiece anyone has ever created. And no matter how strongly their teachers ask them to make changes and how bad the crits might go, they would just say that those are big fools, that they don't understand, no one understands me and stuff, that this is disastrous. So whenever you write, yes, you would always feel it's a part of your heart that you're putting out there for everyone. But you also need to understand that it still is a creation that you put, and it will have flaws. So, you know, you need to be open to the idea that your work needs improvement. So that's another thing that one needs to, you know, be open-minded. Otherwise, it becomes a problem.
Sure. I think when you're talking of syntax, the accuracy of English, it's any language, right? And not just English per se that you're talking of, because I feel and express much better in Bengali.
Any language, yeah, definitely, for sure. And see, one also has to understand that every language has its own strength and has its own lyrical quality as well. You know, like if you start comparing Bengali with Gujarati or with Tamil or with all the other Indian languages, you will start to understand how the tonal quality, how the audio quality of that language differs, and that makes a lot of difference. So just try this simple exercise. Take one sentence, structure it in Bengali, structure it in Hindi, and structure it in English, and you just read it out to yourself and you'll understand what I'm trying to say. So I think whatever you want to say and what language suits best for that, I think that should be your criteria of choice if you think you have an equal command of both the languages.
Yes, I think that's beautifully put, and that will resonate with my listeners as well. But taking a cue from that, let me go a little bit more personal and ask you about how to manage to write in different genres. like, say, for me, technical writing, like researching, formulating arguments, presenting them sequentially and similar, comes quite easily to me. Maybe because I have had practice and I'm writing for some long time. But then again, personal notes or letters or anything of that sort, even, you know, if I sit down to write a story that, okay, I have an idea, but I need to pen it down and write a story. Non-technical stuff. I have seen that I struggle, you know, the factor of expressing emotions per se, you see. I mean, how do you handle these different genres?
So we are talking about three different kinds of writing right now. We're talking about technical writing, we are talking about personal expressions, and we are talking about fiction writing. So all of the three very different categories. So you're saying that you have things for technical writing in place, but you find it very challenging to write either fiction or personal expressions. For me, I can write fiction. I find it very difficult to put personal expressions out there, and so much so that, you know, when it comes to sending a birthday wish, I have this standard line which goes, wish you a very happy birthday, hope you had a great day, wish you a very great year ahead. That's it. My mind doesn't go beyond that. So even I face that problem. So for that, you need to be more aware about your feelings and emotions, one, and you need to be more confident and open and fearless to exhibit your emotions in turn. So if you have those things in place, I think the letters will start coming out just the way you feel. And that's it. And for fiction writing, I think it's slightly easier because you are always not talking about your own self. You're talking about how you understand people feel and people behave. So that also has to be done very analytically and expressed in a very human way.
Understood. Awareness, I think, is a key issue here, and I do tend to agree. Now, moving towards the last leg of the discussion here, and this is the one for which I am collecting raw unfiltered responses from all. Say, for the future of the media avenues in architecture and design, I mean, this is for that purpose, for the overall larger future of the industry. Now, India produces close to 18,000-20,000, something around that, BArch graduates per year. And the numbers do vary annually, but they tend to increase. And we do have a good number of people in the media domain now, with definitely more adding per year. Again, we know that people doing the same kind of jobs tend to come together and associate, and we can take the name of IIA, ISOLA, ADI, ITPI, and so on. But there doesn't exist any specific body for the design media or architectural media professionals till now. And that is my question, because we are booming, we are increasing in number. Say, how do you feel about an institution that looks exclusively at architectural media? I mean, is there a need? Should we work towards something like this? What should be the agendas of such a body, positives, negatives, etc., whatever comes to your mind?
Okay, so just to address this thing and to start things, you know, there's a sad truth that we need to address, and that is the people who are not critical thinkers, and I don't want to use the term intellectuals because that term has been jaded so bad, and it's been, you know, misinterpreted so badly that I don't want to use that term. So I'll just say that people who think critically, it's very difficult to bring them together. Because what happens is that the minute someone starts thinking, they would be convinced about their own thoughts. And in that process, they start feeling that everyone else's thought process is probably wrong. And they would not want to support that. So because of this, these kind of associations many times end up not serving anything. Because even if I look at, I'll take a very simple example, like let us not talk about architecture. Let us talk about, just pick up the example of Statue of Unity, you know. There's still such strong arguments that are on. People say that it's the best project that has been ever done in India, and some people say it's a complete waste of money. So whenever critical thinkers come together, these rifts will happen. And if we have 20 people in the room, we'll have 20 rifts. So that's the problem. So can you repeat your questions again? I think I've addressed the first one.
Yes, sure. So say a body of the media professionals in the AEC industry is formed. What's your idea about what should be the agendas and the objectives for the same? How do you look at that?
The first thing when it comes to anything creative is the kind of monetary and financial rewards that needs to be given back to the creator. If I look at writers, they're underpaid. If I look at architects, they're underpaid. If I look at interior designers, they're underpaid. So that's the first thing that I would want to address, that there has to be some set standard that makes sure that things like these don't happen. I don't know how people will do this, because what happens is that we'll always have qualified people serving and we'll always have unqualified people serving. And the unqualified people will always offer better deals. So I don't know how that thing needs to be. Then we need to reduce the conflicts that we have internally. Honestly, I don't understand, and neither do I know how that can be done. So that's that. And these can be the agendas, I guess. And also there has to be some kind of benchmark in terms of the quality that is being served, because there is something which is like, for example, if I talk about simple construction, there has to be a certain set standard of acceptable quality, which is not there in the industry. Like if a mason is just putting the bricks together and filling the mortar joints, you must have seen how terribly at times it's done. And there are through and through holes which are there in the construction, and if at that stage you had not taken care of those problems, your building is always going to trouble you throughout life. So there has to be some set standard there, like we have in the more developed countries. If you don't do the construction according to those set standards, it's not acceptable. And then the contractor has to go all the way back and do it all over again, shelling money out of his own pocket. So I think that's also something that one needs to look at. But now I'm talking only about architecture and not about the other fields. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's a very prudent, if I can use the word, prudent response as it is, and a very genuine one. So thank you for that. If I may also ask, what are the troubles that you feel will be there in this kind of an initiative as well?
I think jealousy is a very basic human emotion, and that might generate certain problems, because there will be some people in that very group of people who will be doing better than the others, and then the rifts will start. You know how things are, people backstab and people try to cut off your roots and stuff like that. So I think that's something which might start to happen.
Right. Okay. I mean, great to the ground points, and thank you for the actionable insights. Actually, I'm taking notes. So yes, a big thanks to you again from me and my audience for the time that you have put in.
Thank you so much.
So yeah, I believe we have covered all of what we wanted to discuss today. And it's time to get the curtain call. So a lot many episodes lined up. Folks, keep your eyes and ears open. We are just starting out. Head to the description box for Rahul's bio and his social media links. Do share the episode with your friends and foes, and give everyone a chance to listen. So that's that. We are closing for today. Stay safe and be all right. Till the next time, cheers.